the biggest sports stories of the week.
I think that is the attitude you should have. But if the first thing you bring up when you look at the standings is Craig Counsell, then he has real estate in your head.
I don't think you can even argue.
Oh, no argument.
The Green Bay Packers.
No argument the way it ended, but like I just said it, like they were 7-8 last year against everyone besides the Bears, right?
Unique and compelling analysis and opinions when it comes to your favorite teams.
As much as they want, because both teams are good and that game to be
Kyle, you're not feeling this.
Jason knows I'm not feeling
it. No, Kyle and I have already had this argument.
Yeah.
You hate that I feel.
What else was on the WB back then? What else did I miss?
You probably saw the Wayans brothers, right?
Yeah.
The Jamie Foxx show. Don't come on now, Craig. Come on, Craig. You know the Jamie Foxx show?
No.
You know
this is Sunday Karma, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios at The Avenue. Here's GKB founder and CEO, Craig Karmazin.
What is this, an old school version of Sunday Karma? Kyle Wallace, Craig Karmazin, no Scalzo, no Strophy. Does that mean no 7-Eleven mystery guest? Like, do you go to mystery guest alone, or do we go, or
yeah,
do I give you like seven things to guess at?
No, I was thinking mentally today as I was getting ready for my day. I said, all right, well, I just got to think of seven questions I can ask. I was thinking, who could Craig potentially grab today?
Okay, so you're looking for me. By the way, just thinking about that, I did bring the old burner phone, my old phone.
What do you mean, burner phone?
So when my current phone transferred, a lot of my old numbers didn't come through. So the numbers I've been working off of are more of a new list rather than like my full Rolodex. So I decided to bring the full Rolodex because I have not thought about a guest for 11 o'clock today at this point. So,
oh, wow.
But we do have a few commercial breaks where I'll have the opportunity to see who we could pull for today.
I like that. I like that. You have such a Rolodex that you can just go through and call famous people and they'll just, you know, you say jump, they say how high.
That doesn't happen. So that's why we'll see if we actually have someone. That's why you need to be listening 58 minutes from now to see what we could pull.
You've had some big ones, Craig. Some big ones.
We have, but we've been saving some good ones. We look a lot of different options here.
NFL draft week, maybe give me Roger Goodell. I know he's in the phone. Got him on speed dial.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right.
I like that.
Well, let's address the thing that's staring you right in the face, right? And I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about right over my head. If you're watching on YouTube, you could see our man Bango right there, right? He's right there. If I was taller, you wouldn't. Maybe if I just was like standing up straight.
No, your frame is too slender to be able to block out big old Bango. Yeah, you're not Craig. You gotta eat a little bit more.
Right,
and
we
can still see Bango, Craig. We can still see Bango on YouTube. He's been walking on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, I received a text yesterday with a tweet someone forwarded to me, and it was a picture of David Gruber. And it said, if you've watched this first half, you may be entitled to compensation.
Oh, wow. It was rough. It was rough.
It was 67-43 at the half. The Indiana Pacers just absolutely mauled the Milwaukee Bucks in the first half. And the Bucks made it close. And there were some positives that you could pull from what the Bucks did in the second half, but it was not pretty, right? It was not what anyone would have wanted to see in game one for the Bucks. Can I tell you about another game one between these two teams?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Last year, first game of the series, Bucks 69, Pacers 42. Do you know what that was?
Was that game two?
That was game one.
Game one. We went up 1-0 last year?
Game one, Bucks 69, Pacers 42. And do you know how many points the Bucks won that game by?
What, 18?
15 points.
15.
It was a very similar game. Damian Lillard had 35 points, not in the game last year. Damian Lillard.
In the second half. Oh, first half.
In the first half.
He went crazy.
He actually did have 35 in the full game, but he had all 35 of his points in the first half
of that game.
They came out and just ran the Pacers off the court in game one at home, and we saw the Pacers pretty much do the same exact thing to the Milwaukee Bucks. Does anyone recall, Kyle, might you recall what happened in the rest of that series?
Yeah, I do. Dame hurt his something, and the Pacers went off. They went crazy, and they beat us in six.
Yes, so it ended up being, without Giannis, Pacers in six. This is a different version of the Pacers. It's obviously a different version of the Bucks. The best player in that series for the Milwaukee Bucks is Chris Middleton. He is no longer here.
Ooh,
and so you
Chris.
Need to recognize that. The best player for the Milwaukee Bucks this year will be Giannis Antetokounmpo. He is here. He was not here last year.
I have so many questions.
The Pacers last year were much a little faster team than they are today. They're a little better defensive team this year. Tyrese Halliburton is actually playing better in the second half of the year this year as opposed to the first half of the year last year. And Halliburton didn't necessarily shoot well yesterday, but we saw what a great floor leader he is, and 12 assists, one turnover for him yesterday. That almost happens without being noticed, right? Like, did you even really notice Tyrese Halliburton in that game?
When he was jawjacking at the end. I'm so sick of him.
Yeah, he was 0 of 7 from three-point range. He was 3 of 13 from the field.
But he had 12 assists.
But he had 12 assists, one turnover, 7 rebounds, played a nice floor game. Oh, and by the way, in his 34 minutes on the court, he was plus 27.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know somebody else who was minus 24.
So that's how, you know, how it looks when you have a good floor game. I know everyone's trying to pick on Kyle Kuzma, which you already
are. I mean,
we'll go right to that.
Listen, that was rough. I mean, it's one game, but boy, oh boy, he hasn't been in sync at all. I was so
Wait. But did you watch the game or were you on the boat?
I know usually you're on the boat during big playoff games.
Kyle, we know
I'm on
you're
the
usually
boat.
Watching one or two highlights.
Oh, I'm on the boat. I was watching that Bucks game from off the river, but no.
You were on the boat or weren't on the boat?
Craig, it was not warm enough for the boat yesterday. It's still April. But, yeah, I watched a game yesterday.
Okay, so how long into the game was it before you realized that Kyle Kuzma was on the Bucks?
I mean, I realized it early on because I said, dang, Kyle Kuzma is absent right now.
No, but he hadn't,
barely touched the ball.
He hadn't touched the ball. He had not had a touch of the ball.
And then he started shooting and missing. I knew it was a rough game.
I mean, you're saying then he starts shooting and
he
missing.
He missed a three, then he missed like another easy shot, and then I remember the second half he missed the easy floater.
Yeah, in the second half he missed that easy floater. You could tell he never got in the flow of the game, right?
Craig, let's be honest. Listen, I'm not gonna bring the whole Chris Middleton have. Clearly, Chris Middleton is a different player. Who knows how healthy he would have been? But at the end of the day, the thing that is worrisome is that he has not been able to find his rhythm at all since he got traded to the Bucks. It just seems like he hasn't been comfortable with the Bucks. He's still trying to figure out how to be a role player. And that's just been something where I would hope that, you know, he would have been. We lost yesterday because he didn't score any points. Think about it, Craig. If he scores, you know, 12 or 14 points, it's probably a different outcome in this game. He makes some shots, he contributes, but I mean, he contributed nothing yesterday.
It's no coincidence that he and Torian Prince both were not part of
the
offense.
He's another one. He was absent.
Right. But you're talking about people being absent. They can't be absent if they're not getting the ball in rhythm at the right time. The first team did not move the ball. They did not play well offensively.
A lot of Giannis. Brooke Lopez chucking up a three-pointer.
It was Ryan Rollins who got, you know, he
to
got
the bucket.
He got eight shots in 19 minutes. Okay.
And like three of those came in the first quarter, didn't they? Four?
Right. Yeah. Eight shots in 19 minutes for Ryan Rollins, as opposed to in 42 combined minutes, six shots for Prince and Kuzma.
Mm.
So you think about that distribution.
Oh, Prince didn't take no shots then. What, he took two?
One shot for Torian Prince.
I'm going to say, boy.
Wasn't until the second half. But it's not like Torian Prince was passing up good in rhythm shots. What we saw yesterday was the second team was better than the first team. And we've seen that second team with Giannis play really well. But that second team actually played well even without Giannis. Like, there was a moment yesterday where they had five guys. They played a full second unit.
Yeah, late in the third quarter. Yeah, no, they actually came back, or was it early fourth quarter they came back?
They played it multiple times, and that was actually, you know, with now that Jericho Sims is back, they played a full – they hadn't done that really all year. Jericho Sims, Bobby Portis with Kevin Porter Jr., Sakuda as his preferred name, Gary Trent, and A.J. Green, that five. They actually moved the ball that five. Gary Trent was hot from the beginning. He had his first three field goals. But you saw them move the ball. And the key stat for me in that whole game, everyone was talking about how many this Kyle Kuzma and Torian Prince and all that. What's been the key to the Bucks, this version of the Bucks without Damian Lillard?
Well, I mean, for the Milwaukee Bucks, it seems like they run through Giannis. Everybody's been making shots and moving the ball.
There you go.
Playing defense.
Do you know who's the best three-point shooting team in the entire NBA?
Were the Bucks?
Percentage-wise, yes.
Wow.
The Milwaukee Bucks, best three-point shooting team in the entire NBA.
Couldn't have guessed it based off yesterday. You would have thought it was the reverse.
When you have guys like Torian Prince, Gary Trent Jr., and AJ Green shooting the way that they were able to shoot, along with the fact that Giannis, as a, you know, high efficient player, has gone away from shooting threes. This is the number one 3-point shooting team in the NBA. And without Damian Lillard, what we saw down the stretch of this season was Giannis night in, night out as a double digit assist guy, right? We saw Giannis as point center at times, as point forward at times.
We didn't see that yesterday because guys didn't hit no shots, huh?
How many assists did Giannis have yesterday?
I would say less than seven, six.
Keep going.
Four.
Keep going.
You a lie. Three.
Keep going.
Two.
Keep going.
He didn't have zero, Craig.
Giannis had one assist.
One assist yesterday?
So you think about the way the Bucks have been playing over this stretch where it seemed like they found their groove again. Giannis, let's go through his assists in the month of April. 11. 20, 10, 10, 5, and 15. And the 5 was against the Pelicans where, you know, they weren't really playing.
Right. This is
he had double-digit assists in every game.
Yeah,
and now he had one assist yesterday.
And this is why I'm not panicking, is there's a couple things. We all know, you've been watching basketball enough. Anybody that's watched basketball for at least 10 years of their life, they understand how hard it is for your other guys, right? Your superstars, they'll show up. But the other guys, like the Kyle Kuzma's, the Torian Prince, the A.J. Green's, the Gary Trent, to be able to perform at a high level on the road. Typically,
yes,
those guys
on the road in the playoffs
well
is tough, right?
On the road. And that's exactly what you ended up seeing yesterday. Though you saw a good game out of A.J. Green knocking down shots when the Milwaukee Bucks were behind. But that is why it's so hard to win on the road. And so yesterday, the Bucks got smacked, right? They absolutely got smacked. Giannis only had one assist, as you said, Craig, because the team and cast around him weren't obviously knocking down shots when they had them. But I think they just did.
But you're saying not
a good job.
You're saying not knocking down the shots. They didn't have the shots.
Listen. All I'm gonna say is this: is that I'm not too concerned because it's only one game, and the Milwaukee Bucks are gonna be okay. I'm not sitting here saying we need to have Dame. I think the Milwaukee Bucks are gonna be A-okay. The Pacers started off a little shaky early in the first quarter, then they knocked down some open shots and they were able to build a lead. The Milwaukee Bucks weren't able to score, and that's what happens. And you know, it's one game out of a best of seven. Bucks in six. You're going to have to lose some, baby. So I ain't worried about that. It's still Bucks in six.
And that is one of the benefits, as weird as it sounds, to starting on the road. You're expected to lose game one, right? So
if you split
on the road, which they still have the opportunity to do.
Which I believe they can.
Then they are in the driver's seat. It's a long break. The Bucks are home. The Bucks aren't staying in Indiana. The Bucks are home right now.
When's the next game? Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday. Yeah.
So they flew back. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's less than an hour flight, right? So they're back. They're able to practice. They're able to get refocused. They're ready to go. The interesting thing is, will Dame play game two or game three?
I think game three for sure.
Yeah. And so whether he plays game two or game three, reintegrating into this team, into this offense, is normally difficult. I look at Dame, though. I mean, he's a top 75 of all-time player.
Listen, I don't know why Tyrese did that. Don't awaken a sleeping giant like Dame. Y'all got to understand. I don't know why they playing with him. Dame, the team you played last year, that was Giannisless. Dame was trying to carry the team, and then he got hurt. So then it was Chris Middleton.
And by the way, we saw Dame in game one. As I said, Dame came out and put up 35 points in the first half.
Went crazy. So against the Pacers. I don't know why they would play that game. The Pacers are not as talented as the Milwaukee Bucks. They're a very good basketball team. But when you have Dame and you have Giannis, they're both healthy and ready to go. I don't know why the Pacers playing that game.
Think about the Bucks' record in playoff games with Dame and Giannis.
We don't know.
Exactly. I mean, that's the wild thing.
Can you believe
this
was Giannis' first playoff game in almost 2 years?
Yeah.
Almost 2 years. 700 days.
Yeah. So disappointing way to start yesterday, but we'll have a lot more on that. We'll have Jason Wilde. I guess we'll have a 7-11 now. I got to figure that out. We'll also do our picks on the rest of the first round of the playoffs and look at our standings to see how we are doing in our NBA postseason
picks.
I think
I did good.
You might have done okay. We will do that as we continue. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
You're listening to Sunday Karma on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Yeah, we finna set it off in this motherfucker. You hear me? I'm finna put you in the trash can.
This is Sunday Karma on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Carbless Talk and Text Line is open. That means you can give us a call right now. Tell us your thoughts on that Milwaukee Bucks 117-98 defeat against the Indiana Pacers yesterday. How you're feeling about this series moving forward. Jason Wilde will join us at 10:30. Kyle, the guy who was, to me, the biggest outlier. I know a lot of people have jumped on Kyle Kuzma on this. Was Bobby?
Yeah, he didn't play well either.
I don't know that he didn't play well.
He didn't shoot well. Play well, shoot well. That's part of playing, Craig.
Right, it's part of playing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not the only part.
The Bucks were trying to make a push to come back late in the fourth quarter where Bobby had a chance to hit an open three and he missed it.
Bobby had a
clankety clank clank.
Yeah, Bobby was 0-for-4 from three. Bobby played 25 minutes, was 2-of-8 overall. Bobby did have 8 rebounds. Bobby was +3 on the game when he was on the court. So, to me, that's interesting.
94.5 ESPN Sunday Karma. What is your name and what you're calling for?
I like that Kyle keeps the microphone on. That's why he's the worst producer in the business. He's the best host in the business, worst producer in the business. Give us a call.
I like people to get the background.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we do it. You hear Kyle screening the calls in the background. You should be giving us a call also. Jump in. Tell us your thoughts on the Bucks loss yesterday, on the Milwaukee Bucks. That's what we're talking right now. 800-990-ESPN. That's 800-990-3776. Liss is more, the Carbless talk and text line. So I mentioned Bobby, and remember last year, he kind of got swept up in a lot of the emotion of the series against the Pacers and actually got ejected and then came back and played one of the best games of his Bucks career. And so the thing I will continue to say about Bobby is just because he has a down game, do not write off what Bobby Portis is going to be and how he's going to be back up in game two. So just because he shot poorly in that game, just because it's like, oh, when Bobby's not shooting well, all the Bobby stuff seems like a negative. When he is shooting well, I trust Bobby in a big spot. I do not think he's going to have back-to-back bad shooting games. He is such a good offensive player that I trust Bobby going into game two. Part of why I feel good about the Bucks going into game two. Let's talk to Dirty D. You're on Sunday Karma. Morning, D.
Morning. First of all, Bobby is the only other consistent player on our team besides Giannis. And we traded away Chris Middleton for what?
We traded away Chris Middleton for Kyle Kuzma and others.
And what did he do?
For flexibility.
And what did he do yesterday?
Dirty
Nothing.
Dirty deals for flexibility. It's for financial flexibility.
No.
He did not.
That is correct.
Cash considerations.
He hasn't shown up all that much. You can't even compare that man to Chris Middleton.
Yeah,
the only person the person that, that we got that was really good, that's really showing up also, is KBJ. That boy's crazy.
He is, and you saw flashes of it yesterday. But back to Kuzma, I think the thing is, like, he is not the offensive player that Chris Middleton is. He is a big presence. He's hopefully part of, if they're going to get out and run, what could be part of that. But in fast break points, they lost 22-5 yesterday. Kyle Kuzma has to be part of getting defensive stops. He needs to be a better defensive player than Chris Middleton was to help them get out and run. We can't expect him to be any kind of shooter in the way Chris Middleton. That's not realistic.
Their defense sucked yesterday. Their defense was horrible yesterday.
That we can agree on. And like you know, I don't want to sugarcoat it and be like, well, they caught up, all that. I think, Diana, we've all seen enough games that we know once teams are up by 25, they're not playing as well. So I don't want to even give the Bucks such credit for coming back. I think we have to see that the Bucks can stop the Pacers, because you're right, defense was terrible and couldn't stop Indiana at all yesterday.
God, I hope they can do something, because I hate to think of what's going to happen if we screw up again, if we're going to lose Giannis next season.
Oh my gosh!
Three first round departures in a row is what I think people are worried about, right? And I think what we saw yesterday was Giannis take it all on himself in that first quarter.
He sure did.
And he was doing great taking it all on himself. I don't think that's a sustainable way to win. And if Giannis is going to drag us through this series, I think it's going to be with those assist totals that we were talking about. And with Dame back, it's not going to be at that same level. But Doc Rivers said something pretty interesting. Kyle, I don't know if you heard this.
If it was after the game, no.
No. It was actually before the game.
Okay, what did he say?
He was asked, once Dame comes back, how do you readjust, you know, Giannis? And he's like, we're not going to do it. We want Giannis in that role he's been playing with Dame out.
Ooh.
And let Dame be one of those shooters and one of those dangerous offensive weapons that Giannis is distributing to.
That's extremely dangerous.
Right? I mean, that to me is a model that I think, and I'm not overstating this, that's a model that could not only beat Indiana, but could be competitive with Cleveland. If you have that, if you have Giannis as the guy who's it's starting with, and a lot of times people look at Denver and Jokic and the best player in the world that many people are saying right now, and what do they say? How do you beat Denver?
Well, you up pace, tempo?
Make Jokic shoot.
Don't
let him distribute. Give him his 40 or 50, because when he scores 40 or 50, they're less likely to win than when he has 15, 18 assists.
Oh, yeah, 29, 9, and 12 yesterday.
Now, sometimes that guy will go crazy and go 60, 20, and 20, so you can't even compare him to humans. But the same thing with Giannis. The Bucks may be more dangerous when Giannis has 12, 13 assists than when Giannis has 40 points.
When I look at this, my biggest thing is if the role players play more consistently for the Milwaukee Bucks, it's a different outcome. I'm not concerned.
Again,
Dirty D, don't be concerned.
And if you watch it possession by possession, got to put the role players in their opportunities to succeed. We got to get them their touches. Kyle Kuzma was not getting the touches in rhythm. And so then he took some bad shots to start the second half.
What is in rhythm for Kyle? I love Kyle because his name is Kyle. But I'm being legit. What is in rhythm for Kyle Kuzma with the Milwaukee Bucks? Because that just seems like something I could not see.
Yeah.
He's talented. I saw it when he played against the G League Pistons team. He went crazy in the first half, right? But, you know, what is in rhythm for him?
Well, so we saw him not even touch the ball. So when you don't touch the ball for the first 4 minutes and 30 seconds of the game, then you feel like you need to get a shot off, and then you're taking a shot that's not within the offense. Right? Kyle Kuzma can hit an open corner three. Kyle Kuzma also, if you can get the ball to him while he's diving toward the basket, is super athletic and a good finisher who could finish with either hand and is really tough to deal with in the transition game. I mean, he's a really talented player. He can play defense. He's a guy who allows this team to be switchable. Like, we saw that yesterday. When Brooke Lopez is not in this game, you could basically switch just about every pick and roll. This is now a really, really versatile defensive team. And obviously, Brooke Lopez brings a lot defensively when he's in the game. All right, we'll talk to Jason Wilde about the Green Bay Packers. It is draft week as we continue. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
This is Sunday Karma on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. You're listening to Sunday Karma on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Then we start off in the bed. Took her back to my crib, and I regret it. She trying to. Feel like she asleep, so she tried to stay the whole week. I'm like, oh nah, she gotta go. Ask me her name, that's why I don't even know. They wanna know why the girl them dip on me.
Continuing Sunday Karma with Jason Wilde on draft week. Jason, what does the draft represent for you when it comes to the offseason? Is it like get past the draft and exhale, or is it get past the draft and now all the years, there's now all of these new people that I need to write about? What is the draft for you?
Well, that I get to write about and talk about, first of all, I love the draft. I hate the draft industrial complex. Hey, check out my 15th mock draft where I go all seven rounds. That I don't like, because we're all guessing. Not even Brian Gutekunst knows who he's going to pick. He's got guys he likes. He's got guys that intrigue him, but he doesn't know who's going to be on the board when he's up. I always use the example. Jaden Reed has been a terrific pick. He traded back twice in the second round in 2023 and could have easily missed out on him had he gone when they traded back and the Lions took Brian Branch, or had he gone when they traded back again. But instead, he was still available and they got him. He's led them in receiving the last 2 years. So I don't like the draft industrial complex going into the draft. But the actual draft day, the 3 days, and finding out the excitement of them being on the clock. I remember in 2005 thinking, oh my God, they're going to draft the quarterback. They're going to take Aaron Rodgers here. They can't pass him up, can they? And of course they didn't. I just think that when you look at the draft itself, it's the kickoff to the new season. Now, I used to think of the scouting combine, because that's really when, you know, that's kind of like the soft launch of the new season. But the draft is really, okay, it's on. We'll get the schedule a few weeks after that. The off-season program is in gear. So to me, this is probably one of my favorite weekends of the year.
Now, how does this weekend become different with the draft actually being here? Because I would think the Packers usually have their draft headquarters here, and then the draft is wherever it is, right? Because all the teams don't go to where the draft is. So how, when the draft comes to you, how will this make things different for the Packers, and how will this make things different for you?
Yeah, in some ways, it changes a lot. In some ways, it doesn't change anything. For the Packers, you know, Goody even said this last year as we were wrapping up last year's draft. The only thing that changes for him is how difficult it's going to be to get in the parking lot and what the logistics are going to be to get to the stadium. That's the biggest thing. And it's the same as the case for me. You know, we obviously have some awesome stuff planned for draft week, and Tausch and I are going to do the show from the Tundra Trio every day. There's all kinds of fun stuff that is kind of ancillary to the draft being in Green Bay that wouldn't be the case if the draft was in Chicago or New York or Nashville or Detroit. But overall, for those of us covering the draft, and obviously for the team, nothing changes. Like,
so what are you telling people? Because I'm getting this question a lot, and you live there.
The logistics of getting into the stadium for Goody and LaFleur and the scouting staff.
Oh, sorry. I'm listening back to you earlier, I think. So, Jason, what are you telling people who are like, should I go to the draft, or is it going to be a total mess? Like, what are you telling people about actual Thursday, Friday, Saturday when they ask you if they should go to the draft?
Well, I think you definitely have to go. Like, I think being able to see the pomp and circumstance and all the different things that we're going to get to see because it's in our backyard, I don't think you want to miss that, because it's never happened before, and I got news for you, it's never happening again. You know, Mark Murphy talked multiple times about how this is This is their Super Bowl. They'll never get the Super Bowl. There's not enough hotel space. The weather's not good enough, all that stuff. But this is their Super Bowl. So if you have the opportunity, by the way, it's also the event itself is free. Like you download the NFL One Pass and you register to be able to attend. But like there's no cost in the actual, it's not like getting a ticket to a Packers game and then you have parking and concessions and souvenirs and everything else. There's no cost to the actual event. Now, obviously you can spend a ton of money at it, but I just think it's such a neat thing to have in Wisconsin. And I will admit though, I am extremely curious to see what the attendance looks like, because we've been told by the folks that are in charge that they're expecting about 250,000 people during the course of the 3 days. And in Detroit, they had 775,000. So what does that look like? How does that look on TV?
Oh, Kyle, what are you saying, Kyle? You're a little embarrassed by that? What's that reaction?
Green Bay, Wisconsin, so it's going to be a lot different on how many people can fit in there. But still, I didn't realize Detroit had 700,000, 300,000 people. Jason, you're in Green Bay. Of influx of people, that's a lot.
Right, because Detroit starts with a lot more people than Green Bay.
It does, and it has a lot more space.
And a lot more direct flights and easier ways to get there, and even cities that are a two-hour drive, right, when you think about some of the places that are close. But, I mean, Jason, are you thinking that? Are you thinking it'll be one-third the crowd of what we saw last year in Detroit?
Yeah, I don't know how they arrived at that number. I can tell you this. I know I have friends who thought they were going to get rich quick on renting out their homes, and that market has not materialized here. So I don't know if it's because it's more difficult to go to. I don't know if it's, you know, we all think of Green Bay as this quaint football mecca, and we're lucky to have it in our backyard. But I think, you know, without sounding like a small town boy, I think, you know, a big city person might not find it all that quaint and might not be super interested in spending 3 days in northeastern Wisconsin. So, again, I don't know how they arrived at that estimate. Obviously, they're much better at estimating that kind of stuff than I am. But if that's their expectation, if they haven't seen, you know, hotel rooms, you know, the girls have their regional gymnastics championship this coming weekend. And it's in Madison, and when we were first planning their season, you know, oh, it's going to be so hectic, and you're not going to be able to get a hotel room as far as Madison because there's going to be so many people coming in for the draft. That's not the case at all. I got the normal rates I would get on any random April weekend for the hotel that they're going to be at. So I think those are kind of the context clues that tell us it's not going to be an overwhelming throng of people. But again, to Kyle's point, you know, this is not a big city. It's so you put, you know, I don't know, 100,000 people on Friday or Thursday, 50,000 on Friday and 50,000 on Saturday. I'm just making up those numbers. You know, I don't know. Is that overwhelming? Maybe, but I'm so curious to see how it shakes up.
So that makes you, if you're a fan, I think, more likely to go, right? Because it's not like, oh, it's going to be 500,000 people when it's normally 100,000, let's say. You know, typical Packer Sunday, maybe 100,000, right? That you fill the stadium and then there's some ancillary people who are out there hanging out, part of the festivities. If it was going to be like Detroit, you'd be looking at 5X. You're saying you don't think it's that. It may be 1.5X on Thursday night, which to me makes it very manageable.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, again, I think the NFL has been very clear that they're not necessarily looking for this to be big in terms of sheer numbers. I don't think that's what they're interested in.
Which, Jason, by the way, I was there in Vegas, and it was just massive and expansive. I was there in Nashville, and it was just like an absolute party and like, you know, and that was pre-COVID. Cool. But I was there in Detroit last year. I ended up not even going into the draft. Like, I was there for the whole weekend, the whole everything. Like, it was so crowded when the draft was starting in Detroit. Oh, by the way, I was there in Cleveland. And Cleveland was great and big and manageable. When it was starting in Detroit, I was like, cool, I'll get an Uber to my my hotel and I'll watch it on TV. Like, that's how wow. like how wild it looked last year to me. Where, and again, I had been to a few others, so if it was my first, it may have been different. But the others, you could get in there, you could watch a few picks. It's so fun, Jason, as you said. Like, it is like, it almost feels like when you see these NFL Europe games and you see everyone wearing just their one foot NFL jersey that they have and you see right, all these random right. teams, that's what the draft is, because you truly are getting fans from everywhere and who support every team. And it is a worthwhile thing. And if you don't love big crowds, then as you said, Friday and Saturday are going to be a great day to go up for the family. It doesn't cost anything. I mean, so I think if you're a football fan in any way, I think you got to go up for one of those 3 days at least.
Yeah. And it, you know, you have different experience than me, because I've never been to a draft. Like, every year someone in my friendship circle will ask, hey, are you going to, you know, last year it was Detroit, but when it was in Chicago in 2015 and 2016, are you going down to the draft? Well, no, because Goody and LaFleur, or at the time Ted Thompson or Mike McCarthy, they're all in Green Bay. Like, it could be in Green Bay or New York or Cleveland or on the moon. The operation is the same. And so for you to have been to all those different sites and having experienced them and having different experiences at each of them, I'm eager for you to compare them when you see what Green Bay is like, because, you know, I don't mind crowds, but if it's really over the top, like it sounds like Detroit was, and it was kind of if I remember how it was described to us by, you know, the folks that were trying to give us an idea of what it's going to look like here a year ago, you know, it was in a pretty contained area of Detroit, which made it feel that much more crowded in addition to having that many people there. So, you know, the draft campus here, you know, there were a lot of folks that thought, well, they're going to put the stage inside Lambeau Field when we first heard that they were getting the draft. No, they have constructed, for those that haven't been following this, they have constructed a stage that is built on Oneida Street. So if you've been to Lambeau Field, Lambeau is basically the intersection of Lombardi and Oneida. And then across Oneida Street is the Resch Expo Center and the Resch Center Arena and the Don Hudson Center Practice Facility. So they have constructed the stage on the streets, and the crowd goes back toward Lambeau Field. So all the seats will go in that direction. So when a player comes out onto the stage and there's a camera person following them, Lambeau will be in the background out the back of the theater. And I know from the Zoom calls that we were on with some of the planners that from a TV perspective, that's what they were looking for. And again, I think they feel like they can create a vibe here that is not the same as those big city parties. And I think they feel like that will serve them well for the audience that isn't here. And then for the audience that is here, it should be a more manageable crowd, because while they may get big numbers, or at least big numbers compared to a game day, I think it's spread out enough with the Titletown district, the surrounding area of Lambeau, that it's going to be manageable. And you brought up it being, you know, Friday or Saturday for your family. I think that's another reason why folks that thought they were going to, you know, make big money off of renting out their house have been really disappointed, because I do think this is almost like an NFL. It's like a pro football carnival. And so there's going to be a bunch of things that kids can do. Like, I just think it's a really great kind of a, dare I say, outreach, because I know they make tons of money and everything else. But for it to be a free event and for it to be family friendly, I think that's going to be a pretty cool thing for our city.
Yeah, and I think it's because they want it to look like a good TV show. They've taken something. Mm-hmm. Jason, when I was a kid, I was watching the Knicks game yesterday. When I was a kid, I would go to a Knicks playoff game. And before that, I would basically convince my dad, hey, can we just walk over to the draft and watch like four or five picks? Because back then, the draft was just happening in a ballroom, like at a hotel. That would be like a block away from Madison Square Garden. So we'd walk over to the Marriott Marquis, and people would be drafting. Like back when Mark Chmura was drafted, back all the way back in the day. So the fact that
before
they,
Evan Cohen was keeping track of all the picks.
Yes.
Notepad.
So the fact that they have made this into a show like this is why they want fans to come out, and why they do make it such a fun environment, and why I do agree with you. It's worth getting out there if you are a Wisconsinite and you are a football fan, just to be a part of it this weekend. All right, we'll talk about the Packers and their draft as we continue. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
You're listening to Sunday Karma on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Yes! Flea Falls, boy! With me, Harlem.
You're listening to Sunday Karma on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
I put my stamp of authenticity. No better than me. Planet, I swear to God. I'm on my again. I don't be sitting around thinking what I could have been. I'ma do it now. I told mama I'ma do it proud. I do what I want, you do what you allow. My dog blew the loud into a cloud. These verses heinous, so of course they train us through and
continuing. Jason Wilde, we gave you the backdrop of if you should be attending the draft. Now we'll tell you what you're going to see if you go to the draft. So, Jason, first let's hit the non-Packers side of this. You know, it seems like Cam Ward's going one, and then it seems like whatever happens with Shedeur Sanders seems to shape most of what's interesting with the rest of the draft. Is Travis Hunter now a consensus number two? And does that put Abdul Carter three, and is Shedeur like nine to the Saints and dropping, or is there still scenarios where Shedeur goes to the Giants or the Browns? Like, what are we hearing at the top of the draft?
Yeah, I know this, and obviously our ESPN Cleveland teammates are much more tied in on the Browns than I am. But, you know, hearing Andrew Berry talk about him and hearing the comparisons to Shohei Ohtani, I am fascinated by Travis Hunter. I mean, I just, you know, I do my annual draft previews, which are more, here's where the Packers stand, and here's how maybe the draft can help them at each position. And Travis Hunter is the one guy that I will have written about twice as the most intriguing wide receiver prospect and the most intriguing cornerback prospect. And so, you know, he has been very clear that he wants to play both ways. That is something that is largely unprecedented.
Jason, it kind of reminds me of what we saw with some of the prospects like Lamar Jackson, where it was like, I'm a quarterback. Stop trying to tell me what I am. Like,
right.
I know what
right.
I am. And it obviously is different, but I don't think we haven't ever seen this, right? Where you're saying he's the best player at two of the positions in the draft?
Yeah. And so how do you pass that up if you, you know, obviously if you feel good about your quarterback situation? Now, the Browns, I mean, when Jimmy Haslam comes out and says what he did about, you know, taking such a big swing on Deshaun Watson and having it work out the way it has, you know, I don't know that team well enough. I defer to Tony Grossi as to whether or not they're in a position to say, well, we'll wait for the next round of quarterbacks if that's where we end up.
Well, and they brought back Joe Flacco, who brought them to the playoffs
right.
2 years ago. And we saw Myles Garrett sign, you know, which he had originally said he didn't want to sign if he didn't feel like the team could compete. So maybe that was just all looking for a big contract. But I don't know where that puts them.
Well, I also think this, like, if we're being honest about whether it's Sanders or Cam Ward or Jackson Dart, like, I don't, you know, I think if you talk to people who are far deeper into the actual quality of the prospects, I don't think there's the same feeling about them that there have been about other quarterbacks at the top of recent drafts, right? Like Joe Burrow or like Caleb Williams. I know Caleb Williams' rookie season, you know, our ESPN Chicago teammates obviously watched that unfold, and I did too, because I keep saying this, and I know Packers fans don't like it, but I want Caleb Williams to be good. I want a love Caleb Williams rivalry and a Packers-Bears rivalry where those teams are competing to win the division and playing in playoff games against each other, because I think that would do so much for what has been such a lopsided rivalry for X number of years. But I don't know if you can look at Cam Ward. I don't know if you can look at Shedeur Sanders and feel the same way.
I mean, Jason, I've heard them compared more to like that Drake May, like, you know, last year's fourth and fifth quarterbacks last year.
Right. Yep, exactly. And look, Drake May is off to a wonderful start, right, in New England.
Oh, and Bo Nix, right? I mean, those guys in the middle of the first round last year look like, you know, they could be Pro Bowl type quarterbacks.
Right. And if you take swings at them, I mean, that's great, but the reality is all too often you are wandering in the quarterbacking wilderness and then you try the next guy. And then, I mean, the Bears obviously know it from firsthand experience, from Trubisky to Fields. They're hoping they finally put an end to it after all these years. Well, lots of teams tried it and think they maybe have their guy. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I feel like we crowned Jordan Love prematurely, because we're used to the other extreme of quarterbacking royalty as opposed to peasantry. Like, if you look at Jordan Love and what he did in the second half of 23, there's no denying that was plenty of reason to be excited. Inconsistency last year, injury a factor. That's why I keep saying that this is such a critical year for him to show that he is who Packers fans hope he is. I think he's more likely than not that guy, but I still can't say that with the level of certainty that other quarterbacks you can say it about.
So as we move on from that group and the top of the draft and how that'll end up shaping things, and if there could be a Rodgers-like fall for Shedeur Sanders, where do you look at the Green Bay Packers? And by the way, have you watched the movie Draft Day?
I watch it every year. I love that movie.
Okay, me too. What do you think of my theory that in the best trade since draft day, what if Goody traded his first round pick for the first pick of the second round? Just straight up.
Straight up. Who is he? That kid in Jacksonville who is getting fleeced by Kevin Costner.
Yes. Now here.
Why?
Okay.
Why?
So here's my theory. And I recognize this would put him up for a lot of potential risk. So the Browns have that first pick of the second round. Nobody thinks there's more than 15 or 18 first round pick quality players in this draft. So where the Packers are picking, it's not that different of a player than you're going to get with the first pick of the second day. But that first pick of the second day, you have a full day for teams to be like, oh, wow, that guy's still there. Oh, that's our only first-round guy left on the board. Oh, we really want that guy. I feel like that first pick of the second day is one of the more valuable picks of the draft, because people will overpay you for that pick. So if the Packers trade back and have that pick, then they can parlay that into something really big.
So you certainly make that trade if you get another pick or two along with.
Oh, well, of course you do. I'm talking about the truly preposterous thing that's never been done in draft history of moving back 10 picks and getting nothing in return.
Yes, you're an innovator. That's why you've been so successful. Look, the Packers have done that. They have picked at the top of the second round, or very, very close to the top of the second round, a couple of times in the last 8 years. And actually, if you even go back to 2008, when Ted Thompson traded back out of the first round and took Jordy Nelson with the second round pick and accumulated more picks, this is actually, you know, as much as your straight up preposterous idea is far fetched and misguided, the idea of being at the top of the draft on day two is not at all a bad idea. That part you've nailed, because. And I remember this used to be the case way back when this was a 2-day affair, and day one on Saturday was the first, second, and third round, and then day two on Sunday was rounds 4 through 7. And you always wanted to be able to, I remember Ron Wolf talking about it, you can reset your board, because everything's so frantic, especially back then when you were doing first three rounds in one day, everything's so frantic, you got to figure out what your You know, where are you at? Who did we miss? Who's still on the board that we didn't realize was still on the board? That kind of thing. But in the last several years, in 2017, they trade back. They have the first pick of the second round, which I think they got from Cleveland, if I remember correctly. And they miss out on T.J. Watt, and they take Kevin King. And Kevin King is the 33rd overall pick. A couple of years ago, the Packers are actually trying to trade up with the Vikings for the 32nd pick, the last pick of the first round. They want to take Christian Watson. The Vikings say no. We like having the 50th option for that player, but the Vikings have the 34th pick, the second pick of the second round as well, and the Packers end up trading up for that. They give up both their second round picks for that 34th pick, and then they take Christian Watson. So, no, the idea behind your preposterous thought is actually a really good one, but we know Goody wants more picks, and so if your idea with more picks added in, I would not be surprised at all if that's the case, because there are, again, folks that have tracked this class much more closely than me, the Daniel Jeremiahs, the Mel Kipers, the Dane Bruglers. There is a feeling that there is a cliff where in the first round there is a drop-off of guys that are truly deserving of being first-round picks.
And with the Packers' first selection, regardless of position they draft, like what if they move a pick up or down or whatever, the Packers will be selecting Jason.
So I saw our buddy Alex Strolf post this, how he's kept this dream alive since he was just a little toddler in diapers. But it was 2002 that they drafted Javon Walker in the first round, Mike Sherman trading up to take him. I think this is the year that the wide receiver drought in the first round comes to an end. I don't know which of those three wide receivers that they brought in for visits is going to be the guy. I don't know if they're going to have to move up to get the guy.
Tannaroa!
Yeah. Hey, McMillan is a fascinating player. I really like Abuka from Ohio State, and then Matthew Golden. All three of those guys came in for visits. And for as much as, you know, as Strolf is saying, I'm getting my hopes up again. I'm willing to be this rare instance where these guys came for visits, and that is a significant tell on just how authentic the Packers are about the idea of drafting a first round wide receiver. That has not been the case in previous years. We do know, say in 2020, that one of the players that Goody was enamored with was Justin Jefferson, who I think went 22 to the Vikings. Brandon Ayuk went 25, and then he took Jordan Love at 26. I wish we had a time machine. I wish Jordan Love and Justin Jefferson were on the board at the exact same time for Goody, because I would love to know what that would do to Packers history. But the bottom line is they have shown an interest in three first-round graded wide receivers. Will they finally take one? I say this is the year.
Wow. That would definitely be interesting. Jason, real quick, the interesting thing to me is I heard pretty much the only position that's like off the charts this year is running back. Now, the Packers have shown they can get running backs. Like, their backups seemed great last year, and they didn't use any draft capital. Do you see the chance that like four or five running backs could go in the first round, given that we saw the Eagles, the Ravens, like, I mean, we saw running backs this year make huge impact. Yes.
No.
Could we see, well, we're going to see one go in the top six or seven, right?
He's elite.
Could we see any other running backs like we used to jump up into the first round?
I don't think there's going to be four or five running backs, but I think there'll be more than just Ashton Jeanty. And I do think running back is back. I think, you know, Matt LaFleur did a really good job of explaining this, talking about how these shell defenses that teams are playing now to keep everything in front of them, to eliminate big plays in the passing game, teams are basically daring you to run the football. And while it's great, yeah, we can conjure up a 1,000-yard rusher from a day three pick or an undrafted free agent, you see the impact that players who are truly special at that position can have. So I do think the script has flipped a little bit. And look, the Packers, don't forget the Packers have what is basically a bonus draft pick for this rookie class because of what happened to him last year. But they drafted Marshawn Lloyd in the third round last year out of USC. Jordan Love called him a little rocket in the backfield because he's so explosive. But he had some of the worst luck of any player I've ever seen in my time covering the Packers. Like, I mean, he was finally going to come back from an ankle injury, and then he gets an appendicitis and has to have emergency surgery. Like, he was so unlucky. But that gives them basically an extra rookie for this class. And I think they are – I saw Ben Sermons at Maddie's track meet. He's the running backs coach. They are super excited about what he can be. So – I don't think the Packers spend on a running back in the draft, but I definitely think that that is a position that teams are seeing the value in more than ever before in the last decade or so.
Kyle, you were laughing at me. Let's watch. You got Genty. You got Henderson from Ohio State.
Travion Henderson's not going round one. Round two, probably.
You don't think he's going first round?
No, he shouldn't go round one. You got Hampton. Those are the big two. And then you got Junkins as well.
I was going to say, Sampson from Tennessee, I mean, Hampton from North Carolina. When the third running back goes at, like, pick number 29, I expect that a green will text.
You said 4-5. Three's a lot.
When three comes in by pick 29, I expect that little green text from you, your little non-iPhone text, to be like, four could happen here.
There will be two because Hampton won't get past the Broncos.
Okay, but I'm saying once three comes in, I'll expect that text to be like, maybe something's happening here.
If three come in the first round, I will give you that text saying, oh, wow, Craig, that's crazy.
Yep. All right. Well, we know it all. The whole draft's going to be about Shedeur Sanders, which should actually make it interesting. I don't think that's a negative. Shedeur Sanders could be we've seen it, right, Jason? A lot of times the second quarterback has been better than the first quarterback picked. You know, it happened. It happened the last year for sure. So be very interesting to see what happens with Shedeur. I think the Aaron Rodgers, Alex Smith, right? There's that comparison there. So I think the whole draft night on TV will be a lot about what happens with Shedeur, and rightfully so, because I think that's going to be a big story throughout this NFL season. Jason, it's one of your favorite times of the year. Enjoy it thoroughly, especially with being in your hometown your hometown, not your right.
Sort of.
Green
adopted
Bay's
hometown.
Kind of.
I just want to add this, Kyle, if you could switch to the iPhone, I can't even make my Sunday Karma group chat. And you know, I like to put a photo and everybody's in there, but you're the outlier,
Jason.
And so you can't name the group.
Jason,
have you considered making the switch?
I can name people name groups for me all the time. I see I got the KBN group, but Jason, I'm gonna tell you something about me, man. I'm a leader. I'm not a follower. I'm never gonna be a sheep. So it's gonna be Android forever.
He's still using his BlackBerry. Sure. He's still doing his thing. So he's got his flip phone. He's got his flip phone BlackBerry it slides out with a full keyboard. Still doing his thing. There you go. Jason Wilde, appreciate it as always. Listen to him on Wilde and Tausch 9 to noon. Follow him at Jason J. Wilde. Thanks so much, Jason.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Happy Easter to you and the family and everybody out there. I think we've already missed our 7 at 11. So we'll see what's next. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
More Sunday Karma coming up on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.